From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells. And now we speak with Associate Editor at Scientific American, Tanya Lewis. Tanya's reported extensively on the developments surrounding COVID-19 since January, and we always welcome her back to give us the latest updates. Tanya, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. And, you know, during a press conference in early September, President Trump was asked when he thought a vaccine for COVID-19 might become available, and quotations, we're going to have a vaccine very soon, he said, maybe even before a very special day, if you know what I mean. And I think he was referring to the election on November 3rd. Is that going to happen, Tanya?
In a word, no. There's very little chance of that happening. Basically, this has to do with the way that vaccines are evaluated for safety and efficacy. So right now, a couple of the front-runner candidate vaccines are in phase 3 trials for to show that they are not only effective, but safe to give to millions of people. So this is a process that can take months, even years sometimes. But in this case, they've really accelerated the process. And it's looking like, they're on track to potentially apply for kind of an early form of approval called an emergency use authorization, which is it's not the same as a full approval, but it basically allows you to give it to, give it in the middle of a pandemic to people that really need it. So that's not likely to happen until at least late November at the earliest. So it's definitely unlikely that there could be something before the election.
And there's new stuff happening all the time, as you mentioned in the article on October 22nd, which is today. There's a big meeting with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, to address standards for efficacy, safety, and manufacturing of COVID vaccines. What sort of things are they going to be working on today?
Right. So there is actually this meeting going on right now, which is it's an advisory committee for composed of academic experts who are not involved in the trials directly. And they are sort of weighing in on what criteria need to be met to ensure that any vaccine that is ultimately approved is not only safe but effective. And so I think today they're not planning to talk about any of the specific vaccine candidates, but they are just talking about what those general criteria are that would allow them to recommend any vaccine for approval.
Tanya, in this race to develop a COVID vaccine, you have companies like Pfizer who are sort of at the forefront or going the most aggressively or quickly. And then you have other companies like Moderna out of Massachusetts that are not taking such an aggressive stance. What's the difference? And how do you see it being, long term more effective?
So each of the different vaccine manufacturers is using, a slightly different strategy, but it basically comes down to, when they started their trials and how many people they plan to enroll, and then also sort of at what point they decide to measure how many people got sick and whether or not the vaccine was effective at preventing infection. So Pfizer is sort of the front runner in this because they just, basically had enough data early enough to go forward, or they will have enough data, hopefully, in the coming weeks. So it's not really a judgment on, one vaccine being better than the others. I mean, obviously, we'll have to wait and see what the efficacy of the various vaccines are. But there are definitely a couple of close front runners. I would say, Moderna is definitely up there as well. They are expecting data within the next couple of months. AstraZeneca and University of Oxford in the UK All of these are, you know, kind of a little bit neck and neck, but in terms of the final approvals, we'll just have to see which ones, you know, are most effective. And in all likelihood, there will be several vaccines that will be approved at some point.
Now, Tanya, you know a lot about vaccines, and I'm going to throw out a little bit that I know about vaccines that may expose me as not knowing very much about vaccines. But it seems as though the risks of vaccines are a lot of times getting the very disease that it's trying to immunize you against, because in essence, they're administering a small dose of whatever disease it is. I think I remember reading that the last cases of polio in the United States may have been from administration of the live vaccine. Is it the same? I know that's one of the risks here with the COVID vaccine of what they call severe disease, but what is that severe disease?
Yeah, so this is a really good point that you bring up, because I'm glad I have a chance to clarify. Some vaccines historically have used what's called a live attenuated virus. So it's like a weakened form of the virus itself, and your body produces an immune response and protects you. But as you mentioned, in some cases, like with the live polio vaccine, in rare cases, it can actually cause disease. Obviously, these cases are extremely rare. And so when you're talking about vaccinating millions of people, hopefully there aren't many cases. You're protecting many more people than you would be causing to get disease. Mm-hmm. But it is a concern. On the other hand, many of the vaccine candidates that are being developed for COVID are not using a live vaccine. So they're using either a fragment of genetic material or, you know, some other sort of part of the virus, but they're not, you know, using the virus itself, and it's not going to infect you. So that's an important distinction to make. And I think people should feel some comfort that it's, you won't be getting COVID from the vaccine itself.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, welcome to the program. We're having a conversation with Tanya Lewis, and she is the associate editor at Scientific American. Tanya, I'm curious about something. You write in the article, it's written in the article, that these studies with thousands of people are double-blinded, meaning that the subjects nor the experimenters know which participants got a vaccine versus a placebo. That certainly makes sense, and that's the right way to do the science. But I also read that the FDA wanted observation of all of the people enrolled without unblinding it. In other words, the experimenters don't, the experimenters continue to not know who has the placebo and who has the vaccine. At some point, don't you want to unblind it so you can know specifically who got the vaccine and how they're doing relative to the others?
So this is, you know, a really important way that they design these trials. They try to make it as impartial as possible. So if you have one group that has the vaccine and one group that's getting a placebo, you don't want to be influenced. You don't want the researchers to know who got the vaccine, because then they might be more likely to interpret the results positively, thinking that the vaccine is more effective than it really is. So that's kind of, you know, just a standard way of doing these trials. There is a case to be made, though, that if the vaccine is overwhelmingly effective, then you would want to offer the vaccine to the people who got the placebo, because you want them to be protected as well.
Sure.
So there is a case to be made for unblinding the study once they've got enough data to show that it's really effective. But, the flip side of that is that once you unblind it, you can no longer have that comparison between how well it's working in the people with the vaccine versus a placebo. So that, I mean, once you unblind it and allow people to get the in the placebo group to get the vaccine. So in that case, you know, you're basically, you're not going to get any more data on how effective the vaccine is compared to a placebo. And it's a delicate balance. And I think part of what committees like the advisory committee that's meeting today will discuss is how to strike that balance and when, at what point do you decide a vaccine is effective enough that you could just give it to everyone.
Right. And assuming that Pfizer and Moderna, as two of the companies, are that their product is successful, you write in the article that once we start massively producing this stuff and putting it in warehouses everywhere around the world, billions of vaccines will have to be produced, that for Pfizer and Moderna, they need to be at minus 70 degrees Celsius. How do you roll out something and assure that you can keep the viruses that cold, especially in some of the developing countries?
So, I mean, that's a great question. And I just wanted to really briefly just give credit for the article you're referring to. It was written by Charles Schmidt, one of our excellent freelancers. So yeah. I don't want to take credit for that, but I do, you know, edit these stories. So in terms of your question, though, about vaccine storage and cold storage, that's a really big concern, especially in developing countries, because they don't necessarily have access to these, you know, deep freeze labs and facilities. So I think that is going to be something that, you know, we will have to look at ways to get that type of storage to places that don't traditionally have it. There are other vaccines that don't need to be cooled to that temperature, and it's possible that those vaccines might be a better fit for countries that lack access to that sort of infrastructure.
Tanya, as we know, in these test studies, we have real humans being tested. How are those people chosen? I keep wondering this. And with COVID affecting our elderly population so adversely, would the elderly be part of the test study, or how are they chosen?
So these are all volunteers. They go out, but the researchers will go and recruit people to become part of the trial. And you're absolutely right that you do want to include people who are elderly or in higher risk groups because of pre-existing conditions, because those are the people that most need protection from a vaccine. So I know that many of the trials are enrolling people from those groups, as well as racial and ethnic minorities, because, as we know, Black and Hispanic people have been disproportionately hit by the virus for a number of reasons relating to their exposure in their jobs and also in the lack of health care and pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want to make sure that the vaccine is tested in a very diverse population, but it's challenging because, you know, many of these populations, for good reason, are distrustful of medical authorities because of historical mistreatment. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge, but I think it's something that's absolutely critical because you want to make sure that these vaccines work in all populations, not just in a healthy young person.
And then there are sort of two levels of testing with when you test a vaccine. One is, are you going to develop serious side effects? And once you've gone through that, then the next question is, when we expose you to COVID-19, what's the efficacy of the vaccine? And have we gotten even to that second stage of testing?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there's actually sort of three big stages. There's the phase one trials are really just testing a very small number of people to make sure that the vaccine is safe and doesn't cause any serious adverse effects. The phase two trials are looking at a larger group of people, also for safety, but they're starting to sort of look a little bit more at efficacy, although it's primarily for safety. And then the phase three trials, which we're in right now, those are the ones that are looking at really at efficacy and how well the vaccine prevents disease. So that's the primary endpoint of the vaccine, of the trial. But we also want to know whether it prevents against severe disease, for example. And that's something that will require, longer studies to really determine.
Tanya, we have a question from one of our listeners, Dr. John Ziegler. If an effective therapeutic agent becomes available, would that allow for a more careful and deliberate vaccine development?
So that's a great question. There's definitely been a lot of progress on therapeutics in the last few months. We are now seeing development of things, well, some of them are existing drugs like steroids that can help people who have really severe disease. And then there are other newer drugs like monoclonal antibodies that are helping to, or are currently being tested to see whether they can prevent or lessen the severity of infections. But, you know, ultimately, the only thing that's really going to end the pandemic will be an effective vaccine. So at this point, it's great to have those drugs and therapeutics. But I think, and to answer your question, I do think that it takes a little bit of the pressure off a vaccine, but I think there's still such an immense need that we're probably going to want to develop a vaccine as soon as we can, but obviously as safely as possible. So it is that striking that balance that's really what scientists will have to determine.
And Tanya, going back to the October 22nd meeting today to talk about efficacy, safety, and manufacturing of COVID-19 vaccines, how much lobbying is being done by the various pharmaceutical companies? How much pressure can they exert on the FDA people?
So, you know, it's a good question. It's a little unusual of a situation because often, you know, you have sort of the U.S. government, the FDA, and the CDC as, quote-unquote, the gatekeepers who are regulating new vaccines and new products in the medical market, but which is still the case. However, in this case, I think we've seen, you know, there's been some politicization of those agencies and, you know, concerns that maybe they aren't necessarily following this sort of strict protocols for ensuring that whatever is approved is safe and effective. So I think in this case, we've seen pharmaceutical companies themselves actually kind of step forward and argue that, hold on, we need to put on the brakes. We need to make sure we do this in a way that's safe and ethical. So it remains to be seen whether or not, you know, they will exert some pressure, but I think ultimately, I think most people who are involved in developing these vaccines, they know that they want to do this right. You know, you only really get one shot to roll out a vaccine and do it in a way that will make people want to get the vaccine. So it's really critical that we make sure we, you know, adhere to these safety guidelines to make sure that we're not, you know, rolling out a product or a vaccine before it's ready.
And that adherence to the safety guidelines, it would seem to me that once this election comes and goes in a couple of weeks, no matter which way it goes, it would seem that all the pharmaceutical companies trying to develop a vaccine as well as the FDA, everyone's going to take a big, deep breath and say, okay, now we're maybe on a different timeline and we can adhere instead of being forced into something that's not yet proven.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, at this point, basically the prospect of a vaccine happening before the or being approved before the election is pretty much out of the realm of possibility. So it's at least there's no pressure to sort of push something through before people go to the polls. But, you know, hopefully we will get a vaccine soon. I mean, I would be the first to say that I would love to go and get a vaccine when is available. But I want to know that it's, you know, been properly vetted and tested, and that's what we're doing right now.
Right. And a couple of the sort of statistics that you've seen around in the news media and reporting about, you know, only, you know, over 50% of people said they wouldn't take, or they wouldn't have a vaccine, you know, the first vaccine that comes out. And then other people say, well, even when, you know, say between mid and late 2021, all the vaccines that come out are going to go to healthcare providers. Anyway, the common person won't even be able to get a vaccine. So maybe by the time we all, you know, John and I and you, Tanya, can get a vaccine, it will have been vetted and tested adequately so that more people feel safe about it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I certainly hope so. I think, sorry, there's some sirens in the background. I do think that, you know, the point of these trials is really to assess that these vaccines do work and that they don't cause any adverse events. So hopefully by the time the FDA decides to approve a vaccine, they have done that vetting already. And I feel pretty confident about that, just given the fact that, you know, so there's so much on the line, and, you know, there's so many people working on this. I think it would be highly unlikely that they would put out something that wasn't yet safe and effective. But you're right. They definitely will be giving it to first-line sort of health workers and probably more vulnerable individuals first, early next year, if a vaccine is ready by then. So it's probably unlikely that most of us will even have access to it for at least the foreseeable next few months. And hopefully by that point, people will feel comfortable taking a vaccine, because the alternative is exposing yourself to the risk of COVID. And we know that that's a serious risk. So That's what you have to weigh up when you make your decision. And I hope that people decide that being protected and protecting other people is really important.
Tanya Lewis is an associate editor at Scientific American. Tanya, thanks for joining us again. We really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Tanya. Take care. Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.